content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from blogs sponsored by the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina and the Outer Banks Association of Realtors and the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected merely for your enjoyment and edification. As you join us for today's Armchair Traveler, no doubt you are aware that Halloween has arrived. In keeping with the stories of ghosts, goblins, and other spooky figures, we shall explore haunted places on today's episode. First, we hear about things that go bump in the night in haunted places in North Carolina. Written by Shayla Martin, a Durham-based travel and food writer, her blog is sponsored by the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina and is found when you search Visit North Carolina. So let's do so. Take the spookiness one step further than haunted houses this Halloween season and check out actual haunted sites across the Tar Heel State. From friendly apparitions to some straight-up creepy paranormal activity, some people love North Carolina so much they never wanted to leave, even in death. Here are 8 sites across our state to explore for the most legendary and spooky ghost sightings. Number 1, the Country Squire and Liberty Hall in Keenansville, located in Duplin County. Ever wanted to dine with a ghost? That's exactly what you can do at the Country Squire Restaurant, Inn, and Winery in Keenansville in Duplin County, where the spirit of original owner, Joe West, is rumored to still hang around, making sure everything runs the way he likes. After enjoying your meal in a cozy vintage setting, watch where you walk near the dartboard. Darts have been known to fly through the air on their own. Merry chatter and phantom footsteps have also been heard in the Jester's Court and throughout various hallways. For more local haunts, head down the street to Liberty Hall, a historic house and museum. Number 2 is the Omni Grove Park Inn in Asheville. The Pink Lady is a well-known friendly spirit roaming the Omni Grove Park Inn since the 1920s. Whether her fall from the 5th floor of the Palm Court atrium at the inn was an accident or something more sinister, the Pink Lady doesn't seem to hold much of a grudge. She's either seen as a vibrant pink mist or a young woman in a pink ball gown, most often by children. Also a fan of pranks, the Pink Lady is blamed for lights and air conditioners turning on and off and for the rearrangement of objects in guest rooms. Book a night in room 545, where the Pink Lady seems to be particularly active, for your best chance at an encounter. And stop number 3 is the Biltmore Hotel in Greensboro. Sometimes ghosts hang around a certain site due to unfinished business, which might be the case for both Philip and Lydia, the resident ghost at the Biltmore Hotel. Built by the Combe brothers in the early 1900s, the hotel served as their office and that of their accountant, Philip. Philip died in the alley next to the hotel under mysterious circumstances, and the lore is that he was murdered for discovering financial discrepancies. Guests have complained about loud footsteps, the shuffling of paper, and the conversations coming from room 332, Philip's former room. But Philip isn't the only ghost known to roam the halls. In the hotel's boarding house days, Lydia, a lady of the night, was thrown down the stairs by a client. Her spirit still lingers around room 223, which is now painted pink in her honor. Our 4th stop is a battleship, the Battleship North Carolina in Wilmington. Battleship North Carolina was commissioned in 1941 and participated in every major offensive in the Pacific during World War II. One of the deadliest attacks on the battleship was a Japanese torpedo strike in the hull where 5 men died. One young soldier was killed in the battleship's washroom, and his spirit has been seen there. There have also been sightings of other apparitions in passageways, shadowy figures peering through portholes, hatches and doors opening and closing on their own, sounds of running or even objects being hurled through the air. For even more of Wilmington's haunted sites, join the nationally acclaimed Ghost Walk and Haunted Pub Crawl of Old Wilmington. It's a walking tour of the most actively haunted homes and burial grounds near downtown. Number 5 is the Brown Mountain Lights, and that's in Linville in western North Carolina. For decades, a series of unexplained lights have appeared after sunset above the peak of Brown Mountain, changing in size, shape, and color. The earliest reports of the lights were from Cherokee and Catawba Native Americans, then Civil War soldiers. Today, thousands have reported seeing the lights above the mountain. Try to spot them for yourself from Wiseman's View in the Linville Gorge. Look for small, star-like dots moving either slowly or in an almost firework-like manner. Groups of students from nearby Appalachian State University have studied the lights, and they've been investigated multiple times by the U.S. government and others. Number 6 is the Duke Mansion in Charlotte. The story goes like this. John Avery, a former owner of the Duke Mansion, began an affair with a young writer while his wife was institutionalized. Despite Avery telling the woman he would always come for her, dead or alive, it became clear he was not going to leave his wife. The writer ended the affair. Devastated and desperate, Avery asked her to meet him 1 year later at midnight. Upholding her end of the bargain, she arrived a year later, saw him approach, and reached out to grab his wrist, and her hand went right through him. He turned around and said, "Dead or alive." Later, she learned that Avery had died a week earlier. Today, eerie story aside, you can stay in one of the Duke Mansion's 20 beautifully decorated rooms or enjoy cocktails in the courtyard in the summer months. Our 7th location is Cape Hatteras. Lighthouse. And by the way, a dear friend of my wife for many years tells me it should be Cape Hatteras Lighthouse on the Outer Banks. The tallest brick lighthouse in North America has quite the haunted history. The most well-known ghost story is that the Carol A. Deering ship, known as the Ghost Ship, that washed ashore in 1921, void of passengers or equipment. Oddly, the only item found on board was food laid out as though for a meal. There's also a legend of the ghost cat, a large black and white cat visitor that has been seen in and around the lighthouse for more than 100 years. Now talk about taking 9 lives, or living 9 lives, I should say. For self-guided climbs of this haunted lighthouse, visit from the 3rd Friday in April through Columbus Day. Our 8th location is Devil's Tramping Ground outside of Siler City. Just south of Siler City is a barren circle about 40 feet in diameter in the pine woods of Chatham County, known as the Devil's Tramping Ground. Folklore says the spot is a place where the devil himself paces in a circle each night to ponder what havoc he can wreak. Well, seemingly going against the law of science, not a single living thing will grow in the circle. Not a tree, flower, weed, or blade of grass will sprout. Even vegetation that's transplanted there will either wither or die. Thrill seekers have traveled to the circle at night and reported that if you place an item in the circle, it will have vanished by the following morning. So there you go, some interesting material there about North Carolina. Well, next we're going to read from a blog hosted by Outer Banks Association of Realtors. And Victoria Jackson is the writer, and she has 14 spooky ghost stories on the Outer Banks. Blackbeard, the Pirate, and Other Ghost Stories is the introduction. The history of the Outer Banks dates back to the very first settlers and the Lost Colony of 1587. Of course, the Native Americans favored the area long before these settlers arrived. This long history is bound to set the stage for drama and trapped spirits. Some paranormal experts believe the Outer Banks is one of the most haunted places in the U.S. With pirates, shipwrecks, and such a long history, there is a lot to haunt in OBX. Here are our favorite Outer Banks ghost stories from north end of the island to south. The North Room of Currituck Lighthouse. Sadie Johnson was the young daughter of the lightkeeper, and her family was the first to live in the lightkeeper's quarters at the Currituck Lighthouse. Sadie's bedroom was in the north room of the house. Each day, Sadie would play in the sand by the water edge and build sandcastles. One day, she did not return home, and her body washed up the next day. Tragic, but looked to be an apparent drowning. Until the subsequent deaths occurred, a friend of the keeper's wife stayed for a brief visit and slept in the north bedroom. She caught a mysterious illness and died. The last family to inhabit the house also suffered a tragedy. The lightkeeper's wife was being quarantined due to tuberculosis in the north bedroom. She lost the will to live after being separated from family and friends and died in the room. No one has spent an entire night in the north bedroom of the keeper's house ever since. Haunted Portrait of Whalehead. If you smell smoke while touring the restored Whalehead Club, Head to the dining room. Here you will find a portrait of Mr. Knight holding a cigar. Many tour-goers believe they smelled the cigar while taking the tour, but of course smoking is not allowed in the museum. The cigar smoke has lingered for decades and was first noticed when researchers from Atlantic Research Corporation were staying in the facility. There has even been a haze visible around the portrait, and the portrait has been sent out to be restored due to the apparent smoke damage. The Black Pelican Restaurant. This restaurant is in the building that served as a life-saving station, in fact, life-saving station number 6. These stations, 7 total along the coast, were responsible for rescuing mariners who were caught in storms or ran into the shoals. The station keeper of number 6, Captain James Hobbs, had a surfman named T.L. Daniels on his crew that took pleasure in antagonizing the captain. The captain could no longer tolerate the man when he insulted Hobbs' wife and shot him in July of 1884 in front of the life-saving station crew. T.L. was buried at sea with no witnesses, and the captain was never tried for the murder. Restaurant patrons report seeing T.L. Daniels roaming the restaurant where he was murdered by the captain. Then we have Seven Sisters. The Seven Sisters is an area in Nag's Head near Mile Point 14. It got its name from seven sisters who were slaves owned by a kind man who set them free near the end of the Civil War. The sisters wanted to return to their homeland and disappeared one night. The next day, a large storm hit the area and left in its wake 7 large sand dunes. These sand dunes are named after the slaves who disappeared. Lost Colony and the Legend of the White Doe. In 1587, over 100 men, women, and children traveled from England to Roanoke Island to establish the first English settlement in the New World. Virginia Dare was the first English-born child in the new colony. 9 days after she was born, Governor John White, grandfather to Virginia, sailed back to England. When he returned 3 years later, on August 18, 1590, the settlement was gone. To this day, it is still a mystery what happened to these early settlers. Some believe Virginia Dare and others went to live amongst the natives. Legend has it that Virginia argued with a witch doctor, whom perhaps wished to marry her, and when she refused to put her under a spell to turn her into a white doe after her passing. The ghost in the form of a white doe is still seen on the island to this day. Then we have the Roanoke Island Inn. This inn, with a view to the lighthouse in Manteo, dates back to 1860, and today is owned by descendants of the original family. It is said the ghost of Roscoe Jones, former owner and postmaster in Manteo, haunts the inn to this day. Roscoe was extremely distressed when he was let go from his position as postmaster. He isolated himself in the inn and passed away a short time later. It is said a man in a postal uniform can be seen leaving the inn on a regular basis. Guests also report hearing footsteps when no one is there, or seeing vases smashed to the floor, window blinds moving up and down, and radios turning on and off. Then we have the Pioneer Theater in Manteo. The original Pioneer Theater in Manteo on Roanoke Island dates back to 1918 and was moved to its current location in 1937. George W. Creef, Jr. opened the original movie house, and it remains in operation with the original family today. This single-screen, family-friendly theater is a small-town gem where no R-rated movies are shown. Admission is only $5, and the most expensive concession item is $1. Some locals believe it to be haunted by the former owner, who demanded people be respectful to one another. One rule is cell phone use is prohibited inside the theater to ensure the uninterrupted enjoyment of all patrons. There are reports of a ghost knocking cell phones out of patrons' hands when using them inside the theater. And then we have the Bodie Island Lighthouse. And by the way, some people do call it the Bodie Island Lighthouse, B-O-D-I-E, but the correct pronunciation we understand should be Bodie. But unfortunately, tradition has its ways, and so you'll often hear Bodie. The Bodie Island Lighthouse is not as famous as its neighboring lighthouses. It was the second one built in 1859, when the previous one was abandoned due to a poor foundation. The second lighthouse did not fare well, either as the Confederate soldiers blew it up to prevent Union soldiers from using it as an observation post. The gatekeeper's cottage on the lighthouse grounds is where the haunting occurs. Every day at 4 p.m., there's a knock from behind the massive bricked-over fireplace. Then we have the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse. There are many ghost stories that take place near and around the famous Cape Hatteras Lighthouse. One that you may be familiar with is centered around a historical figure, Theodosia Burr. It is said the ghost of Theodosia Burr, lost in a shipwreck in 1812, walks the shores around the lighthouse at midnight. She was the daughter of Vice President Aaron Burr, who was plagued by scandals and treason. She was married to Joseph Alston, a wealthy planter and later governor of South Carolina. It was an arranged marriage and not a very happy one. Years later, her portrait was found in a humble fisherman's cottage near Nag's Head. The fisherman, William Poole, had offered the portrait as a payment to a doctor and said he received it from a young woman in a rowboat who had no memory of who she was or where she came from. The fisherman cared for the woman and nursed her back to health. When the woman heard the doctor was to receive the painting, she yelled, "It's mine! You shall not have it! I am on my way to visit my father in New York, and I am taking this picture of darling Theodosia." She grabbed the portrait and ran into the waves. She disappeared, but the portrait floated back the next day. The portrait is displayed in the Lewis Walpole Library in Farmington, Connecticut. And then we have Gray's ghosts. Yes, there is also Gray Ghost, who can only be seen in the same area where a severe storm or hurricane is approaching. Gray was killed sometime in the 1900s when a sudden summer storm hit the beach. He appears as a misty apparition that disappears as one approaches and does not speak. Now, his ghost is a warning to beachgoers whenever a severe storm hurricane is approaching. Then we have the ghost cat. The ghost cat of the lighthouse has haunted the area for over 150 years. All agree the cat is black and white and around 20 pounds. The gender of the cat sometimes varies. When the lighthouse was moved, the cat was seen in the new location. The cat is known to rub against people and even let you pet it, but once you try to pick it up, it will disappear. Flaming Ship of Ocracoke. Each September, on the first night of the new moon, a flaming ship can be seen sailing past the coast of Ocracoke Island. Many German immigrants from the Rhine Valley came to America in the early 1700s. For most, it was a safe and trusted voyage. One voyage did not turn out that way. The crew attacked the immigrants, stealing their valuables and setting the ship on fire and casting it adrift while the immigrants, whose boats were slit, were still on board. The crew launched the longboats and gathered the plundered wealth and started to make their way to Bath, North Carolina. As they were rowing away, laughing and bragging to each other, the captain looked back and the ship was plowing through the waters and quickly gaining on them as though at full sail at the command of living humans. The crew rowed faster and tried to outpace the flaming ship, but the ship rammed along the boat, sinking it, the treasure, and the crew. The burned husk of the ship washed up on Ocracoke the next day. On the first new moon in September, the eerie wailing sound can be heard just like the sound made so long ago from the violent attacks. Outer Banks Ghost Stories, Blackbeard's Head, Teach's Hole. Edward Teach, otherwise known as Blackbeard the Pirate, was known to hide along the inlets of the Outer Banks. His final execution occurred in 1718 near Ocracoke at Teach's Hole. When he was caught, he was beheaded and his head was hung from the bowsprit. His legend has it that his head continued to scream once removed from his body, and his headless body swam around the boat and circled in three times before it was flung overboard. Even today, folks report seeing a headless body swimming in the cove and a headless body walking with a lantern on the beach looking for his head. Then we have the Graveyard of the Atlantic. The Outer Banks is known as the Graveyard of the Atlantic for good reason. More than 1,000 ships have been lost on the shoals, and many lives have been lost. It is said that ghost ships can be heard with drowning screams and eerie sounds. One particular ship has remained a mystery. The schooner Carol A. Deering was spotted by lightships on January 29, 1921, with the crew visible but seeming to be sailing a peculiar course. On January 31, 1921, at 6:30 a.m., the ship was found abandoned on the shoals. Her lifeboats were missing, but rough seas prevented the Coast Guard from reaching the ship until February 4th. At this point, it was discovered all personal belongings, key navigation equipment, important papers, and the ship's anchors were missing. Several investigations were made and some suspected pirates, rum-running gangsters, and mutiny, but no trace of the crew, the log, or equipment has ever surfaced to this day, and it remains a mystery. The Outer Banks of North Carolina has been captivating visitors for centuries. From the first Native Americans, the first colonists, to the present-day vacationer, there is something special about this island that is difficult to describe in few words. Once it is experienced, it's hard to go back to life as it was before. The salt, sand, and sea air get under your skin and won't let go. Ah, some great stuff there, huh? Well, to complete our Armchair Traveler Spookathon, if you will, we're going to head to the West Coast this time. Los Angeles Times writer John Healy is going to bring us a contemporary story, Expanding Consciousness Among the Dead, Hypno-Yoga at Hollywood Cemetery. The story also appeared in the October 5th, 2021 extra section of the E-edition of the News and Observer. Now, John's story takes place in Hollywood Forever Cemetery, where many famous people are buried, among them Rosa Parks, Aretha Franklin, Duke Ellington, and Irving Berlin. So let's see what we find. Dateline, Los Angeles. It's early on a cool gray September morning at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and people are gathering amid the tombs to do yoga. Kundalini yoga, to be precise, with some hypnosis thrown in. The organizers call it hypno-yoga, and as usual, as that may sound, they're not the only ones, combining the millenniums-old Indian practice with the therapeutic technique Franz Mesmer pioneered in the 18th century. Hypno-yoga practitioners are scattered across the country and the Internet, but Ellen Heuer and Monique Raymond are the only ones doing hypno-yoga at Hollywood Forever and offering it for free, at least for now. Donations are accepted, of course, with the net proceeds going to charity. And there is a slight spoiler alert here that the Hollywood setting does have a twist or two. On this morning, people in sweatshirts and workout pants filter into the site a few minutes before the 8 a.m. starting time, carrying rolled-up yoga mats and tarps to shield them from the dew. Raymond welcomes them with a song that might be just a tad too on the nose for cemetery, David Bowie's Ashes to Ashes. This being L.A., students, all adults, mostly women, young and old, continue wandering in well after the 75-minute class starts, eventually bringing the total close to 30. The session unfolds every Wednesday on the Fairbanks Lawn, which you might mistake for a high-end park if it weren't for the imposing tomb of famed actors Douglas Fairbanks and his son Douglas Fairbanks Jr., located at the south end. The west side is dotted with mausoleums and abstract stone sculptures, while the eastern side is bordered by a two-story stone wall. On closer inspection, you'll find that the wall is actually formed of tombs, many still awaiting occupation. Although Hollywood Forever is her first cemetery, Heuer has been a trained hypnotherapist for 30 years, and she filed for a trademark on the term hypno-yoga in 2000, and that expired in 2009. The reason why I blended Kundalini yoga with the hypnosis is that when you do this expanded breath work, you alter your brainwave patterns into an alpha state, which replicates a mild hypnotic state, she explained in an interview. Even in that mild state, you're more receptive to the feedback that I give, which on this day is about helping people deal with the stress and anxiety of their busy lives, and with the COVID-19 filling hospitals again, there's plenty of stress and anxiety to go around. Most of the attendees lay their mats along the rectangular reflecting pool leading from the Fairbanks tomb to the stone patio where Raymond presides. Others station themselves along the stone wall underneath engraved messages to beloved fathers and mothers, brothers and sisters. A typical one is in the inscription gracing the tomb of James Bernard Hollander, a film editor and cinephile, who died in 2019 at age 73, describing him as having a humor and spirit that cannot be contained. Nearby, the tomb for goddess Robin Victoria Gallagher, who left Earth on April 16, 2020, at age 65, adds this admonition, deal with it. Even if you do yoga with your eyes closed, there's no mistaking the main purpose of the grounds. Just getting to the Fairbanks lawn requires you to pass through acres of loss. This is a showy cemetery, a place where people flaunt the wealth or celebrity they achieved before moving in. But you're seeing dead people, or rather tributes to dead people. Lots of them. Which is not to suggest the proceedings are ghoulish. Raymond started teaching yoga classes on the Fairbanks lawn last year in large part because, with the pandemic taking off, outdoor sessions pose less risk of infection. And she happened to be a friend of Tyler Cassidy, the yoga-practicing Hollywood Forever president and co-owner, who has turned the cemetery into an events place. These days, people go to the graveyard for concerts, movies, festivals, and Monday night Buddhist meditations. Yet Raymond and Heuer and many students also argue that there's something appropriate about conducting hypno-yoga classes amid the dead. This is not a haunted space, says Bowman Hoffman, a class regular, or Bo Hoffman, I should say. This is a restful space. Another student, Jennifer Drake of Los Angeles, conceded that some people called the setting creepy. She disagrees. It's really, really peaceful place, Drake adds, saying that I feel like it's a connection with everything. Stephanie Cremati of Los Angeles came to the session with her friend Victoria Bond of Manhattan Beach in Toto, a little pooch named after Dorothy's companion in The Wizard of Oz. And yet another reminder that we're in Hollywood. On the other side of the stone wall stands a memorial to the Cairn Terrier that played Toto in the movie. Kiramati is a fan of hypno-yoga, saying it enables you to connect yourself and do some work. Bond gave the Hollywood Forever setting thumbs up, saying it feels more powerful to be connected to the spirits. Well, we can pause here and acknowledge the obvious. This is a sort of thing that earns Los Angeles its La La Land reputation. There's a distinctly L.A. entertainment industry vibe to the gathering as well. Both Heuer and Raymond make their living as award-winning Foley artists, and a number of the students also work in Hollywood. And no, yoga and hypnotherapy are not for everybody. The combination requires pliability of both body and mind, along with a knack for tuning out worldly distractions. But there's nothing exclusive about these sessions. Raymond talks students through the movements in each exercise of Kriya, explains the meaning of each mantra, and offers alternative poses for people who can't quite twist themselves into the ones she's taking. The class begins with Raymond thanking an absent Cassidy and saying that today's donations would go to Del Gato Rescue, a charity for abandoned and feral cats. She also touches on a couple of the themes of the day, that good and bad intermingle, that you need to be questioning, flexible, and open to change. Kundalini yoga is a good example of the good and bad intermingling. The man credited with introducing the practice in the United States in the late 1960s is Yoga Bhajan, a charismatic former Indian customs inspector who built his Los Angeles-based yoga studio into a lucrative empire. After he died in 2004, he was credibly accused of sexually abusing multiple followers. The class chants together briefly, then the students get on hands and knees for the back-flexing cat row Kriya. The music, meanwhile, shifts to Lady Gaga's country pop crooner, Million Reasons. As everyone knows from one Kriya to the next, Raymond tells students what to do with their minds as well as their bodies. In this position, she instructs at one point, say a silent prayer to yourself, to your self-future, your self-past, your self-present. Take a moment and be grateful for the lessons that you've had the privilege to learn. And so, some yoga there in a famous Hollywood cemetery just for the weekend. Well, my friends, that kind of brings us to a close on today's spooktacular episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be joining us next week for the next edition. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.